Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery, brought to you from the Cramer Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben. And well, right now I'm just introducing it. So we had some technical difficulties on this podcast and some of the introduction got lost, but it's a lot of really good, valuable information. So we're going to just kind of run with it. So, but first I'm still going to do the shameless plug. Yes, you're stuck with that. Check us out at watercolorsaquariumgallery.com for all kinds of really cool stuff. We have cool merchandise, we have cool plants, and we have cool aquarium supplies. And if you like what you hear, buy stuff and it helps us keep on doing it. And maybe it'll help us to not experience the technical difficulties we're experiencing to make us have to do things like this. I don't know. It could be easier, but who knows? Anyway, on with it. So we did a podcast recorded a few months ago, the top five saltwater fish you should always keep in stock. And really what it is what we think we should always keep in stock. And so this is the list of those fish. And it is, don't worry, it's not just me. It's me, Charles, and Amy talking about these fish that we think are some of the most iconic and important fish in the aquarium hobby in the area. So give it a listen. Let me know what you think. I would love to hear some reaction to this podcast on Watercolors Aquarium podcast listeners page on Facebook. Let me know what you guys think we should keep in stock. But here we go. We're kind of picking it up. Don't worry, it'll all make sense. So I'm gonna shake things up a little bit. You know, we started out with fish that we should always have them in stock because they can go in anybody's aquarium. And I'm going with a fish that we should always have in stock, but most people can't have. A great big puffer fish.
No. If only because it's more difficult for us when we have a great big puffer fish in stock.
So I feel like you need to specify a little bit here because there are certain puffers that don't belong in the hobby. And you and I have had those discussions.
No, I agree. And, you know, we have one of them right now that does not belong in the hobby. The porcupine puffer. And that's because they'll get up to 30 inches long. Yeah. Maybe even more than that.
So which ones would you be your pick for this and... why should we have
a burfish or a stars and stripes or one of them that just is gonna flirt with everybody? And that's it. That's the reason right there. It's personality. And it's a pet fish and it's something to get people hooked. Mm-hmm. People want to come see it. They want to come visit. They're big. They're showy. They're unattainable, but it starts conversations.
Yeah, right? There aren't a lot of people setting up a 180 plus fish only tank right now. Not with these glass prices.
Right. Yeah. I want that. He's so cute. Well, here's what you got to do. But you could do something like this, right? So I'm not saying we should have one of those in stock because we're going to sell it. We should have one of those in stock because it's going to attract people to the hobby.
I want to go back. I don't disagree with you. I want to go back to and specify and clarify a point you made about how we have a porcupine puffer, but they don't belong in the puffer. Do you want to tell a story how we have that?
Oh, yeah, because it was surrendered to us.
It's a rescue.
Yeah, it's a rescue.
So was the Stars and Stripes for that matter.
Yeah, it was. It's true. Yeah, we do. We end up with a lot of puffers and most people can't handle or aren't willing to do what it takes to handle a big puffer fish. They are a lot of work.
Yeah.
They start really good conversations.
Like, look at the bottom of the tank that Stars and Stripes is in if you want to see how much work they are, because there's 20 clamshells on the bottom of that tank.
Right. Yeah.
Now, he gets very loved.
He does.
A little too loved maybe sometimes. Maybe a little. But as if you're going to get that fish and not do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody is.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Mm.
Yeah, so? This is not the time and place for like the rant about pufferfish that Charles and I have been building towards. But it is that like, and I was a victim of this when I first started in this type of thing too, where it's like the first fish that you learn has a personality because of how human-like they look.
Puppy dog eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like they give you that like mammalian, like that's a baby. Uh-huh. Like, and... It really resonates with people. Mm-hmm. It's that entry level. Now, do I think pufferfish are the most intelligent, sociable, trainable, smart, like companion fish? Probably not. They are really just 9 times out of 10 begging for food.
Right.
I would argue like the larger angels are like... blow a pufferfish out of the water.
Oh, intelligence? Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's something that everybody can understand just by looking at it.
Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a smart fish.
Right.
That's a fish that's looking at me.
Look at those eyes.
Mm-hmm. Too cute.
Yep. All right, Amy.
Okay. This is one that it's like a fish that's really been growing on me for a couple of years that now I'm at the point where it's hard for me to come up with a downside for. Mm. Yellow chorus wrasse.
Yeah, that's a good one.
They seem to just be pretty happy-go-lucky fish that get along with pretty much everybody. They're hardy. They're out whenever they're not buried in the sand to sleep. They do some good work picking worms and stuff off of rock. They're just fantastic fish that are bright that you can see from across the room that you don't hear people talking about all that much.
Yeah, if I'm remembering correctly, they're capable of also eating the type of parasitic snails that eat tridacna clams.
And a number of things. They're very utilitarian. They will eat flatworms. Mm-hmm. They will eat vermitid snails, sundial snails. There's another one of the big ones that they'll go after.
Yeah, and just without complaining. Yeah. I feel like 29 would be a little bit tight, but I wouldn't even worry about a 40.
I would put them at 40. 29's too small. They're going to get to the 4 or 5 inch range when they're full grown.
But they're not as like out open water darting around as like a fairy or flasher wrasse is.
True. Yeah, very true.
So, and like we were talking about with the Dottybacks, it's a really similar like lifestyle. They don't seem to really get into territorial disputes with much of anything, unless maybe you have something really similar. They're great dithers for shire wrasses, like leopard wrasses.
Yeah,
they're just good workers.
That's actually a fun like story for like how we quarantine. But like our success with leopard wrasses is almost entirely dependent on either yellow chorus wrasses or flasher wrasses.
Right.
Because I don't know what it is about that type of pairing, but it seems to be close enough that it triggers like food competition.
Yeah.
So it encourages the leopard wrasse to eat, but different enough that it doesn't trigger territorial competition.
It's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah.
And it's pretty fun to watch the leopard wrasse watch the yellow chorus wrasse and kind of try and figure it out. And they do. They figure it out well.
That like relationship is so dependent on our quarantine process here that on multiple occasions we've gotten in a leopard wrasse and the other wrasses we ordered didn't come in. So we grabbed either a chorus wrasse or a flash wrasse that was out of QT and put it through second round.
Yeah.
Because that leopard wrasse needs that companion.
We fail with quarantine on leopard wrasses if we don't have a good dither.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's a good one. I like that. Well done. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, it kind of snuck up on me a little bit. I didn't realize how much I loved him until I started making this list.
Very cool. Very cool. Sir Charles?
I want to talk about red firefish. The fish that I just dissed.
You mean orange firefish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just something specific to that fish that is endearing to myself and a lot of people that walk in the door. They just seem irresistible. And so like if someone set up a 20 for a firefish or two, that makes sense to me. Like that's a good tank.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, and I know there are people at this table that may or may not disagree with me, but in my head, these are by far the quote unquote, and I hate this expression, the most reef safe fish I've ever worked with.
I would say with a long list of companions, yeah.
But specifically in the firefish, it's funny to me because it's reef safe because they're not a reef fish. They live outside on the slopes outside of a reef.
Yeah, rubble zones, right?
So a coral, they don't know what that is. So they don't know what to do with it. So they just leave it alone. As mentioned before, they're very passive, so you have to be very careful about tank mates with them.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, they're a really cool, endearing fish. There's just something specific about a fish that likes to hover in the water column, and if you have managed to get your hands on a pair that are compatible, they're really cool because they do this almost like fin flick communicative thing with each other, And I have no idea what that is from what I can find in the scientific literature. There's no hypothesis on what that is
right.
exactly doing, other than it seems to be some sort of communication. We can't figure out what.
But it's between males and females, right?
Yeah. It looks cool. Mm-hmm. It's just, I think they're one of the best display fish for a, I will say, smaller aquarium. And I don't mean a nano, but small.
Yeah. Amazing behaviors. Really cool colors. Right. Yeah. You did bring up the whole pairing issue, and there are some very definite challenges that go along with that. Namely, they are not sexually dimorphic, and adult mature males will kill each other.
Yes.
Yeah. So the whole group of firefish thing doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
Ever.
Fun fact for people who come into the store, a lot of the time when we get multiple fish at once, we try to pair them.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at our showroom floor and you see a pair of firefish together, that means they went through quarantine together and didn't try to kill each other right. at some point.
Yeah.
Or if you see a firefish by itself and a firefish by itself in another tank,
yeah,
that probably means it didn't work.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the advantages to that quarantine process. We have multiple tanks on the same system in quarantine, and we can observe, and you know pretty quickly.
Oh yeah.
That they're not going to get along.
Usually within hours.
Yeah. 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 No, those are cool fish.
Yeah.
I like them.
Also, purple firefish are what got me into the hobby. So,
right. So you have a soft spot for firefish.
I will always have a soft spot for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Got to consult my notes just a minute.
All right, Ben, what do you got left?
I don't have very many left because mine keep getting taken and like.
Me too. I've been adding as we go.
Yeah, I know. I'll make something up at the end of it. I was gonna save this one for later, but I'm just gonna do it because I'm running out of ideas. I'll come up with more. Don't worry. I can work on the fly. But I'm going with an expensive angel.
Oh, just generically?
Just generically a $100 plus angelfish.
Mm.
Makes
okay.
The $50 angelfish look cheap.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's something we don't have in stock right now, and we should. We should always have one big, majestic, showy. Well, I guess it could be a majestic
right.
angel because that's the specific.
I was trying to figure out if you said majestic angel or, I mean, things in
lowercase
like
M.
The Emperor Angel group are like crazy flashy and really desirable. Those are fun to have around.
Sorry.
No, you're okay.
My brain immediately went to flame angels because they're $100 plus fish now.
Yeah.
And then I was going to tease you and be like, but we sold all of them.
I know, right? Yeah. And really, you know, if we had like a $200 or $300 angel in, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's purely a sales tactic, mm-hmm. right? Look at the pretty fish. Wow, they're amazing. I wish I could have something like that. Well, at least I can have this one.
Yeah.
Yep.
I want to call it like the consolation prize mentality.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's not.
Right.
But you're not really like if you go home with like a coral beauty, you're not downgrading.
Right. Exactly.
That's a gorgeous, personable fish.
Right.
It's just in a small package.
That's one of those fish. A coral beauty is one of those fish that I think if they were expensive, people would want them more.
Yeah.
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 It would be fun as like an exercise to bring in, I don't know, like one of our moms or something like that and put a picture of like peppermint angel, flame angel.
And a banded angel.
Yeah. Which one costs more?
Right.
That would be kind of fun. Which one is the coolest?
I like that. Yeah. Do you know a banded angel?
No, I don't know that one.
It's a black and white angelfish. I mean, they're cool, but it's like a $600 or $700 angelfish.
Yeah.
Black and white. Yeah.
Like, I feel like the flame angel's going to win out a lot of times.
I don't disagree. Yeah. Kind of like a black tang.
Oh, you mean an ugly Scopus tang?
Yeah. A $600 ugly Scopus tang. Right.
Strangely enough, I 100% agree with her too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's the, you know, the thing about rare fish. It's not how cool they are that makes them expensive. Mm-hmm. It's how rare they are.
Yeah.
How expensive they are might make them cool to some people.
I had a very specific interaction, and this probably was like a year ago, but we had several different Scopus tanks. And so if you don't know this about Scopus tanks, they have like a gradient of colors.
Yeah.
And so someone came in and they saw the darkest one we had at the time. And they were like, oh, my God, is that a black Tang? And I was like, no, that's a Scopus. And the second I said that, he was immediately disinterested.
Right.
And I was like, dude, it's a, at that time, it was, I don't know what they're priced now. At the time, it was a $60 fish that fooled you into thinking it was a $600 fish. You should have been really excited about
that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
The collectors do not care.
That's a good one. I'm not going to complain. I don't know. It sounds like you're planning a pretty good Fowler display for us, or maybe soft coral display.
Mm. Or maybe a display that has a bunch of fish in it that we can try. Are they really going to eat this?
That would be fun. Mm-hmm. We've already been working on that a little bit, but not talking about it much.
Nope.
The smirk on his face.
We've always got plans and machinations. All right.
What you got, Amy?
So I was trying to think of what is an awesome centerpiece fish for like a smaller mixed reef or even down to some of the slightly smaller tanks. And I feel like we should always have a long-nosed hawkfish in stock.
They are so cool.
They have not been available enough lately, I feel like.
I know.
And they are a bit of a stretch because they do get over $100 for some people. But like, that's one fish that I think is another one that just fits in so many different situations.
I love the way they look around.
Mm-hmm. And it's a fairly bigger fish that can go in a fairly smaller tank. They get 5 inches, and to me, a 40-gallon is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I think going any smaller isn't about necessarily how much space they take up and more about just keeping the tank clean.
Yeah, and they've got that little mouth, mm-hmm. which means that they're not going to pick on stuff like a lot of the other hawkfish. You know, a red flame hawk is an amazingly gorgeous fish, mm-hmm. but it's got kind of a big mouth, so you got to be really careful what you put with it.
Yeah, for your little gobies and things like that, it might cross into that eat it territory.
Right, and even like cleaner shrimp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Long-nosed hawkfish, they keep to themselves. You can always see them. They will form some kind of relationship with you, and they will always be looking at you. They're just a blast to have around.
Sometimes it's hard to take pictures of other fish when you have a long-nosed hawkfish in your tank because they want to be in the shot.
Mm-hmm.
They're a TikTok where I was trying to film the Orchidotti backs.
Classic photobomb from a hawkfish.
Side of the tank.
Right. Yeah, they're like, constantly watching.
That's a fish that probably watches you more than you watch it.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And there are very few fish that I think of that I feel that's for.
Mm-hmm.
Like an angel and a pup, I feel like that's probably an even ratio.
Yeah.
Like if they feel like you're paying attention to them, they'll pay attention to you.
Right.
But hawkfish, they just want to figure out what you're doing.
The whole time.
They're all so
the time.
Curious.
Mm-hmm. You just did hawkfish?
Yep. So it's Charles again.
What you got, Charles?
I really hate that I'm bringing this one up.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. Genuinely. Yellowtail damsels.
Oh, that's not mine.
Really?
How dare you hate them?
Yeah.
Damsels do not get a lot of love around here.
No, they don't.
Right.
But yellowtail damsels, like, genuinely, someone comes to you and says, I have a 55-gallon reef, and I want to put 5 of something in my tank. What's good? How many options are out there for you?
As far as I'm concerned, 0.
Yeah. I feel like you could pull off a group of damsels in there.
Yellowtails are definitely a better option than chromas.
Yeah.
For sure.
Which are still damsels, right?
It's just a...
Sort of.
Well, they're just a genus of damsel.
Yeah. Or a yellowtail damsel is a genus of chromis.
I just mean for like the weird like perspective dichotomy of green chrome, or you can't put any damsels in your tank. They're assholes, but you can put 12 chromis.
Yeah.
Like from that perspective. Yeah.
So
chromis may as well be damsels.
Into, you know, our love of damsels and a teaser for an upcoming podcast about all of those fish that you could do in large groups in your reef tank.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Large.
Right.
The only reason we haven't done that one is because it's depressing. There are no, it's just, nope, you can't. Nope, you still can't. You can't do that one either. That one doesn't work.
Right. Except, no. But, no.
Well, yeah. Until.
Until.
Right. Yellow-tailed damsels. We do have a couple of tanks that have more long-term colonies of them.
Yeah, but they're
big.
They don't get that big.
No, but the tanks are big.
Oh, the tanks are big.
Yeah,
sorry.
So five of them is in a 55 is where I'm...
I've done it.
For how long?
I think that would have been 3 years? 2 years?
Hmm. Skeptical.
At that point, you're just hoping that they shake out territories that don't overlap.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really what it's about.
And that's why I specifically say this one and not other damsels, because at least in our experience here, they do seem to maintain smaller territories than, and I'm going to go to the extreme end of the spectrum, than a domino damsel.
Yeah. You mean than a killer damsel from hell?
Yeah.
Right.
Those things are awful.
They are. Yeah. They're cute, but they're awful.
But, and here's the flip side.
Yeah.
It's a cheap.
Right.
Readily available.
Right.
Hardy.
Right.
Attractive fish.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So like, let's say you have a 30 and you have a pair of clowns and a yellow watchman goby.
I'd put a yellowtail in there.
Yeah.
It's the only damsel I would put into it.
Exactly.
That's it. Yeah. I don't know what it is about that damsel. Why is that the only one? There's others in the same genus that don't work.
Now, I'm being a little facetious. I had 3 in a 55.
Okay.
But
okay.
I stand by my, like, if you want, let's say, a group of anything in a 55, like, I don't think you could pull off 3 to 5 clownfish.
You know the only word I'm going to challenge you on?
Yeah.
Group.
Yeah.
You can have 3 of them. They're not going to be a group.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The territories just might not overlap. That's where you get to.
I'm using that as a very loose definition here. Because reefs... reef aquariums group doesn't really exist.
It doesn't work. Stop trying.
For yellowtails, it seems like you can bet on, like, if you've got 24 inches for each fish.
Yeah. I would think that's going to be accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would put that there.
Yeah.
I really love this fish just because of how cheap and hardy it is. Like, you could set up a 10-gallon, I'm thinking about my words because I don't know if I want to say reef tank, but saltwater aquarium for under $200 and have a fish that you can see all the time.
Let's say $250 and say you put in a Kenya tree.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just have a light on it. But, like, if you're just like, you know what? I want a saltwater tank. I want it to be easy. I want it to be cheap. I want a fish that I don't have to worry about. And I want a good saltwater fish pet. Damsels. Yellowtail, perfect. They're so hardy. They're so available. Aylin's damsels can go in just as many situations, but are cooler.
If we could get them again, I would say, yeah. I haven't
that
would
have been on my list if I had seen one in a year.
I haven't seen them on a list in at least a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. But availability of those things just disappeared completely.
But yellowtails are more outgoing than Dan Allen's is.
It's true.
I'd love to play around with some of the jerk damsels, though,
yeah.
As a single fish.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to reiterate something.
Yeah.
I want to point out to everyone listening, I want everyone to stop, process, and think about the fact that all three of us agreed that yellowtail damsels are a better, quote-unquote, group damsel than Chromis.
100%.
In that sometimes it works.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. Quit doing that to Chromis. Quit killing Chromis. They don't work as groups.
They don't deserve it. They're not a group fish. They're a pairing fish.
Yeah.
Right.
Chromis would have been on my list if I could have convinced people of that.
Yeah.
Because they're still great reef fish. They're still beautiful. They're still outgoing. Just have one.
I had someone come in like a week ago. It was a great conversation. Very big digression here, but they walked in and saw we had one Chromis at the time, and they were like, only one, and they were first shocked.
Yeah.
And then I went into the whole spiel of their life history and how that works, and they were like, oh, so he's happy. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no competition.
He Much might have been happy if he could have murdered 6 of his friends, but if you're the murderee, it's not as fun.
Exactly, yeah. No, all right, I'll buy it. I'm going to say yes to that. Okay.
It was a tough sell even for me, but I'll be honest, Derek is the reason this is on the list.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's multiple conversations with him.
Yeah, a lot of these are tested in our... No, I wouldn't say tested because we don't usually experiment in our service tanks.
Sometimes you do.
But proven in our service tanks.
There you
go. Concepts that we play around with in the store, we then take to those tanks and establish rules with them.
Yep. And also find out that that was a bad idea.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Like the pink spotted shrimp goby with the jawfish.
Oops.
Bad idea. Yep. The shrimp goby loved it.
Jawfish, not so much.
Jawfish didn't know what ate him. Yeah.
Ooh. All right. Ben, do you have any more?
I do. Yeah. So 2 years ago, I would have said we need to always have a yellow tang in stock.
Yeah.
Or is it 3 years ago? How long has it been?
I think 2 years.
It's been too long. And a yellow tang, it to me, is still a quintessential, amazing 75-gallon tank or larger. 2 years ago, I would have said they pretty much should all have a yellow tang in them. You can't get that color, that boldness, that attitude without a yellow tang. But I feel like lately we've been seeing an adequate replacement for a yellow tang. And it's my new favorite tang. Chocolate tang.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
Part of it is the life history of chocolate tangs are so cool. They're a tang that go through color phases.
I love that.
Yeah.
I actually love the half black juvenile too.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's amazing. The Ebley Eye juvenile. Okay, so what we're talking about here is this is Acantharis papyrus.
Which, great name.
Oh, yeah. As an adult, they go through like almost three color phases, right? Their juvenile phase mimics some species of dwarf angel. And it varies based on where the chocolate tang is collected from, which dwarf angel they mimic. And the mimicry is amazing. An Ebley Eye angel is one of the common chocolate tang juvenile mimics. And Ebley Eyes have these really cool little orange squiggles in them. And when you see the Ebley Eye angel lined up next to the juvenile chocolate, it's almost shocking. It's like you're looking at them, you think you're looking at two Ebley Eye angels, but something's wrong. So there's a half black mimic, there's a lemon pill mimic that even has the little blue on the eye.
Personally, that's probably my
favorite. I know, that's hard to beat.
And they do have a different shape than other tangs, or than most tangs,
yeah.
That is angel-like.
It is, yes. As they go through their next color shift, they get a really cool yellow. It's almost like a mustard yellow, but not in an ugly way, in a good way.
Yeah.
And then that yellow kind of fades into, as they get into their full-on adult phase, most of them end up going kind of a good tannish, fading to black color. But it's almost like they've got really cool shading. I don't know how else to describe how that color pattern is on those fish.
Well, and they still get like either a red or yellow like tail ring too, right? Most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just a nice little pop of color.
They've got a couple little gorgeous accents on them for sure.
Especially in a reef tank that's chock full of color. Having some contrast over time isn't a bad thing.
They're not as jerky as a lot of Acantharis tangs are. They're not as prone to ick as, you know, the big three, powder brown, powder blue, blue hippo. Well, I guess big four Achilles is in that list too. Although they go through quarantine here, so either way, that doesn't matter. But
I think
chocolate tangs just...
Yeah, I think...
They're just good.
They're great. Like, I think the true, at least for me, shining grace for this species is the fact that... I'm infamous around here for not being as pro-tang as everyone else is at the table.
Right.
But the last three chocolate tangs we've had come through the doors have endeared themselves to me because they are very outgoing.
Yeah.
And that means something.
Yeah. And gorgeous.
They're gorgeous.
Beautiful fish. They have a better fin shape to me than a yellow tang does.
Oh, yeah.
Yellow tang is just all about the color. I mean, it's that. But the elegant.
Yeah, and they have the zebra soma, like, I don't know, silhouette, which is cool.
It's good.
But other zebra somas also have that.
And that lyre tail on the chocolate tang is...
Yeah.
Yep.
Magnificent.
Yeah. Magnificent.
Actually, the only Tang, and maybe we should get into Tangs a little bit, because, like, shamefully, I did not put any Tangs on my list, just because I was really focusing on the type of tanks that people are setting up new right now, which not a lot of people are doing big tanks. But the only silhouette that I like better is the Tamini. Those pointed cool. fins.
Yeah.
Whew, that's cool.
I still will take, I won't argue with you on it, but I would take a chocolate silhouette over a Tamini. But I see exactly where you're going with that. Yeah, there we go. We're all right.
Ben and I just like curves.
No comment. Anyway, yeah, Tangs were a tough one. I knew I had to put something on the list. And it took me a while to come up with chocolate Tang. I would have put yellow on the list. I thought about putting Scopus on the list. The reason I didn't is because, and this partially is the way that we have the store designed, and it's kind of a bummer. We have black backgrounds, and Scopus Tangs kind of lose a little of their pop. They get that pop right back when they go into a tank.
Yeah.
But they lose a little pop in our store. So
that's
we
a
sit
huge
on them a
reason I put the Chorus on my list, is because you can see that thing from across the room in our tanks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I would have put a Coal on as an underrated fish that should be, everyone should have them, but can't get Coal Tangs anymore either.
Honestly, if I was going to select one Tang for my fish to keep in stock, it's the one we have been, which is actually, I think, my favorite Tang, the Powder Brown. I'm surprised that has ended up being the one. But like, for hardiness, for availability, for price, it's the one that has it all right now.
It kind of does. It's true.
I would give the edge to the chocolate Tang personally.
Yeah.
But Powder Browns for me are probably a close second.
They're awesome. I would consider the chocolate a little more hearty than a Powder Brown.
But
less available, which is just hard to believe. But that, how that changed.
What a world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Notably, none of us put the blue hippo Tang on our list.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
Yeah.
Top five fish that we wish we never had to stock again.
Genuinely, as the guy who runs quarantine here, I would be happy if we never got in another hippo Tang.
For sure.
They are so much work. They swing wildly between either being the biggest asshole or a big pansy, and there's never a middle ground.
Yeah, the amount of people that come in and saying that their 3.5-inch blue hippo Tang is trying to kill everything.
Yeah. And the amount of people who come in and say my 6-inch hippo Tang is dying because it's trying to squeeze under a 1/2-inch gap under my rock.
Right.
Like,
right.
And it's one or the other. It's never my normal blue hippo Tang.
Right. Between that and the amount of people that say, I have my 35-gallon tank set up. I'm ready for Dory. And no.
Yeah. And let me, if I was looking, if I'm putting myself in my 15-year-old body looking at aquarium books, blue hippo Tangs, based on those pictures, would have been my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But every single time we get one in, they get pushed down further on my list of Tangs.
Yep,
like, they are
for sure
dead bottom, and that gap is growing.
No question. No question. My formative saltwater aquarium book, there's a blue hippo Tang on the cover of it. And that book, they call it the Palette Tang.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah, because it's shaped like the classic, you know, the French artist palette.
Mm-hmm.
That's the pattern on it. The black on it.
That's a way cooler name.
It is a cool blue hippo is a horrible name. But that's because it's Periacanthus hippatus, and that's why it gets the term blue hippo Tang.
Duh. Sad.
I know. Well, and they're, you know, hippo-like in their oafness.
They are stupid.
Yeah.
he's not saying, like, oh, dumb fish we shouldn't have. No, he's saying they're stupid.
They're stupid.
They're not smart.
Right.
And a lot of the time it's endearing. It is not.
It is not with blue hippo. No. No.
Like, I would almost like describe puffers as endearingly dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like in a dumb dog kind of way.
Yeah.
Right. Not the case with a blue hippo.
We have one in a service tank that we've gone out there 4 different times We go there, I would say that, I'd say it this way. We go there about four different times a year because they say, our blue hobo tang is dead. And we go there and no, it's not dead. It's just laying on the bottom sulking. Probably somebody walked by too fast or something and made it mad. Right? So they think it's dead and it's not. And we have to go there and poke it. And oh, look, it's a miracle. It's alive. So annoying.
Sounds about right.
Have we ranted long enough about blue hippo tanks?
It's too easy.
I know, right?
It's low hanging fruit.
Right.
This would, stay tuned for the Ben, Amy, and Charles stand-up comedy where it's an hour of us just bitching about blue hippo tanks.
Yeah, we should do the comedy roast of the blue hippo tank. You're so dumb. No.
All right, I willfully and willingly beat the dead horse. I'm done.
Okay, me too. I'm going to go back to, we started talking about tangs because chocolate. I'm going to go back to, we started talking about tangs because chocolate tangs are cool.
Oh, they are great.
Right. Do you got one more?
Yeah, did we talk about angels yet? We hinted at angels.
We hinted at angels. I mean, I talked about big angels.
So my one angel pick, pygmy angels.
I love those guys.
We should always have a pygmy angel in stock.
You're right.
Talk about centerpiece fish for a small tank.
Yeah. Yeah. All that angelfish personality in a cute little package.
Yeah. And you've gone on record as 20 gallons.
Yes. I stand by that.
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
For me specifically, I would say Atlantic pygmy angels are probably my favorite angelfish just because I think they retain a little bit more of that larger angel personality than, mm-hmm. say, a coral beauty or flame does. And that just makes them just a little bit more enticing to me.
Centropyge argi is the Atlantic pygmy, and they are the smallest of the angels.
And it is a fish that's just fun to watch.
Yes.
Like, go about its business.
Yeah.
Just everything they do is adorable. They're just a fish that really draws you in, and I think a good fit for most tanks. They even often get along with some of the larger centropyge just because they're so different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you can make it work.
They're the only... No, there's a whole complex of them found in the Atlantic Ocean. All of the other centropyge are in the Pacific. So the Brazilian and African flamebacks, which for a while they were one species and they're subspecies, now they're two different species. But the African flameback is found off of the west coast of Africa. The Brazilian flameback, I'm just going to make you guess where that one's found.
But the pygmy is like farther north in the Atlantic, isn't it? Or is it
The Atlantic pygmy is found throughout the Caribbean.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So it probably doesn't overlap with any other small angels.
No, they shouldn't overlap.
I don't know what that means, but it's interesting.
It is. Yeah. The African flameback and the Brazilian flameback are both a little touchier. They're a little harder to get through quarantine. Atlantic flamebacks or the Atlantic pygmies, just they seem to do just fine.
Yeah, it's hard for me to remember ever losing a pygmy angel.
Right. Yeah.
Coral beauties are up there as well as just like solid fish.
Yeah. And you can get them to pair up pretty easily. So they're sexually dimorphic. The females have a much smaller cheek spine than the males. And so often we kind of treat them like firefish, right? If we get a couple in at the same time, if they are slightly different sizes, put them in together, they're either going to like, I'm going to kill you right off the bat. Or they're like, hey, what's going on? How you doing?
Yeah. Angelfish don't hide their feelings.
No.
No.
Atlantic pygmies also have a very specific body language that's very like funny to me to watch. Like Amy mentioned that they're always busy doing their business. And in my head, I'm always picturing like the guy in the business suit walking really fast downtown with a cell phone in his
mm-hmm.
ear.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, Atlantic pygmies give me that same vibe where they're like very much centered on whatever they're doing.
They're mm-hmm. always working and very serious about it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
Give me 5 more sheets of algae on my desk by Friday.
Yeah. In the meantime, I'm going to go look over here. Yeah, no, that's a good call, Amy.
Amusing,
we need to get
busy little fish.
We needed an attainable angel fish on the list, and mm-hmm. that's a good
one.
Yeah,
and they just barely won out over coral beauties, but that just, it almost seemed like clownfish to me. Like,
yeah,
we should have coral beauties in stock too.
Right.
Just, they're amazing.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think the list 5 years ago would have been Royal Grama, Yellow Tang, Coral Beauty, Orange Ocelotus Clownfish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm missing one. But, you know, that was like...
He was counting on his fingers, although, by the way. Yeah, so he was literally doing that off the cuff.
Very notably, Royal Grandma hasn't showed up on any of our lists.
No, and I think that the Orca Daddy Back beats it out, personally. It
does. Yeah, if you've got to choose every time.
Yeah. Any situation that you could put a Royal Grandma, I'd much rather have an Orca Daddy Back. They're more outgoing. Right. They're just a better fit.
Tank raised. Or captive bred. And easier to pair up than Royal Grandmas. Royal Grandmas, it's going to be a gamble.
Yeah.
With Orca Daddy Backs, if you just start with two that are small, one's going to turn into the male.
And like one of my favorite quips about Royal Grandmas, and I love it every time someone sets me up for it, is that people will say, but a Royal Grandma has two colors. And I'll be like, yeah, having two colors doesn't matter if half its body's hidden in a hole all the time.
That's a good point. I like
Perfect.
It.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, Charles, you got one more?
I do.
You too.
So for me, I was thinking very hard about what I thought was like, what's a goby that we should always have?
Yeah.
And for me, unquestionably, it should be Yellow Watchman gobies.
I don't have any more on my list now.
Because... damn, is that fish cool.
So my one, I put Watchman Goby on my list. I thought about saying Yellow Watchman. The reason I didn't is because, have you ever seen a 5-year-old Yellow Watchman Goby?
They're very pale.
They're 6 inches long and brown.
Yeah.
Right.
But
let's say olive.
Okay, I'll go with olive. Yeah. Sure.
But not yellow, for sure.
No, not yellow.
Personally, I'm just okay with that, though. And like, A, they're stunning when they're younger, but B, of the Watchman gobies that I've worked with, and I say this as, I think I've worked with like 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
My experience is very limited with them. They always have the most outgoing personality. And so I'm definitely giving the caveat of, my experience with Watchman gobies is very limited.
Right.
But of the ones I've worked with, the Yellow Watchmans have always been the most outgoing. And so for me, I feel like that matters, especially for like the downside to a shy Watchman Goby is you never see it because it's in a burrow.
Right.
I had an Aurora Goby and a Tiger Pistol Shrimp, and I would see it once or twice a month if I was lucky.
Yeah, I will admit this. The Aurora is probably my favorite Watchman Goby, but...
they're gorgeous.
Yeah. But they're much more shy.
That Aurora was my pick. And really, so much of it is just... I mean, if you want a Yashahazi, get an Aurora because you can't afford it.
So what I was going to say is, as my pick for Watchmen, is a Yashahazi and an Antenna Goby.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Because they're both the same species or same genus. They're both similar size. You could put those... I would be okay with either one of those fish in a 5-gallon tank.
Yeah.
Because they stay so small. The Yashahazi is a $150 fish, and the Antenna Goby is what, $39.99?
Yeah.
Right? Similar personalities. They pair really well with candy pistol shrimp. The Yashahazi and a candy pistol shrimp is a quintessential combination.
Yeah.
But the Yellow Rose Antenna Goby, to me, is still a gorgeous little fish.
Mm-hmm.
Pairs well, can go in lots of small tanks.
It's hard to go wrong with any shrimp goby, to be honest.
Yeah.
Except for the pink spotted.
You know what?
They're problematic.
I'm going to see defeat. I think the second you said antenna goby, I was like, oh, wait, that's better. For a smaller tank, they're still pretty, like, they're not as outgoing as a Yellow Watchman, but
it's hard to say better, though.
Yeah. I'm saying better in the scope of, let's say, a store. Like, I think that fish fits in more situations.
But I think you have to have both.
Yeah.
Right? Because that Yashahazi is going to get your attention.
Mm-hmm.
$150. Oh, but look at this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, kind of have to have all four. Like, not even you have to, but like...
why wouldn't you?
Shrimp gobies are such an easy sell.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you can sell them with shrimp.
That's, I mean, that's definitely the fun part, for sure.
It's just kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about it before I said it. I'm committing to it. That is probably the easiest animal symbiosis, like animal-animal symbiosis you can put in a reef tank.
Definitely.
I think, yeah.
Like the other thing I was thinking was maybe like I was trying to compare anemones and clownfish because people try that one a lot, but I'm like, that one's actually kind of hard to do.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, now you have to have a tank that can house a bubble tip anemone and you're
and
looking
a light
at,
and
you're looking at an expensive 75 gallon plus tank.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be okay with like a, let's say a 5 gallon with a shrimp and a tuna goby?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You bet. It's way more attainable.
Yeah. That's it. You're done. Yeah. Right? That's your tank. Kind of like our neon cleaner goby tank, right? That's it.
But that's a lot of activity for that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can do symbioses in smaller, like, I mean, ignoring the big, like, coral is a symbiote by default.
Yeah,
but like,
that's specifically why I said animal, because I knew someone was going to call me out on coral.
But sexy shrimp and anemones are an easy one to do, too.
That's true. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can do smaller anemones that the sexy shrimp will still be hosted by.
I would love to see more tanks with, this is a big digression here for us, but with maxi mini carpet anemones and sexy shrimp.
Yeah, that's another, you know, maybe that's a podcast right there, right? Quintessential combinations.
Mm. We did it in freshwater.
Yeah, let's do it in saltwater.
But I've yet to see, like, we've yet to get in maxi minis that I thought did really well. Like, we still have the ones that we have had for a while that are, like, the size of a penny.
Yeah.
And we feed them.
But they
don't
get very big, though.
No, but they should at least get a couple of inches.
They should. Yeah.
So maybe that's one we need to do some more playing with.
Mm-hmm. All right, Amy, are you going to walk us out the door with this one? Got one? One more? Just one. Just one.
One more.
One.
We didn't talk about any fairy or flash arases.
It's true.
And to me, it would be carpenters, I think.
Yeah.
As availability, price, personality, and looks. That, like, combination of things.
Right.
Blue-sided doesn't often give you, like, the color that you need in a sales tank.
They can be a little bit fadey sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the only group that we haven't talked about for, like, essentials.
It's true. No, I would disagree. They should be on the list.
Saddleback clowns are getting up there for me, too, if we're talking about things to have in stock. I think if we're going to keep one species of wild clown in stock that's not Percula or Oscillaris, saddleback is the way.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
This is the way.
Yeah. I sold a pair of those last week, and the dude was like, these are so cool.
They are.
He didn't even know.
Right.
Right. He didn't know anything about clownfish. It was like his first pair of clownfish. And he's like, I see the black ones, but what's up with these guys?
Just a little bit different body shape, a little different personality. Yeah. It's just enough to make them a little cooler.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to say Clarks, but they get a little bit more aggressive.
They do. They're kind of like a damselfish with like clownfish paint job.
Yeah. And they have the body size to back that up too.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the saddlebacks and, you know, all of our discussion about no groups work, saddlebacks and skunk clowns.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll always have to pay a little extra attention to the smallest one.
Right.
But
yep.
It usually doesn't get outright murdered, which is more than you can say for most clowns.
Right. Up in the front of the shop, we've got a group of, are there 7 saddlebacks?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it looks great.
I think we're at the point of digressing now, but you just reminded me of that video that I watched a long time ago where it was a guy with one of those huge in-wall tanks and it had a decent amount of fish in it, but like most of them were clownfish. Like he had a pair of pretty much every type of clownfish that you can think of. And of course the video that I watched was him pulling all of them out and replacing them with like 100 orange clowns. Or Oscillaris clouds in general, but like that tank was so cool. It was probably over 1,000 gallons, maybe 2,000 gallons, but like full of anemones and like a clown pair every couple of feet.
Wow.
Of like all different types.
I saw a tank once that had, it was probably a 180, but tall. So the footprint was 2 foot by 2 foot and then 6 feet tall with this receding rock wall. And that had probably 500 clownfish in it.
Wow. It's hard to know what to do with a tank like that, right. But that's probably perfect.
It was amazing. They obviously had some it was a commercial installation. And so it clearly had probably 1,000 gallons of sump and support and filtration for that system.
Right.
And it was just so many clownfish that they couldn't target each other. It was all different species, from maroons to perks to skunks, everything. But you could see the conflict, but not the destruction.
Yeah, just tension.
Tension, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
It was a pretty cool tank.
Well, we digress hard away from Flasher and Fairy Rasses. We
did. Well, I'm just trying to think about what groups we didn't talk about.
Well, I did have a Flasher Rass I wanted to talk about. What was the one in QT? Is it McCosters?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is like basically a carpenter with a little different flair to
yeah.
it. Like,
I mean, that's basically a Flasher Rass, right? A Flasher Rass, a McCosker's versus a Dot Dash versus a Carpenter's.
Yeah.
It's the same fish with a slightly different paint job.
Yeah, but I like it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's hard to point at one specific fairy Rass because I think that until they get in the display, their color's kind of dull.
True.
There's no one that I think looks great all the time.
Right.
Although that super male blue-sided fairy Rass in our 220 is pretty cool.
It's yeah. pretty sweet. Yeah.
And a super male exquisite is a one that almost always looks good too.
That's an outstanding fish. A classic solar is.
Oh yeah.
That's a killer
fish. I don't
know
why I forgot about solar. Mm-hmm. It's almost like abstract art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a good blue. I mean, it's a good solid.
Good blue, mm-hmm. purple, and yellow. Good. Those are colors that show out really well.
Yeah. Yeah. And once they're through quarantine, once they're established, those are good, easy, hardy fish.
True.
We don't lose them once they go into somebody's tank.
No.
How long has that blue sided been in that 220? I think he's been there longer than I've been with the company.
Yeah, we've had that fish a long time.
Are you sure he's a blue sided? I thought he was a Lubbock.
I thought he was a blue sided.
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. It was a fish that was really boring when we added it in there. We just had an extra one that was like around forever.
Oh,
we
were like, that's right. No, that's a... I'll have to think of it.
I was.
It's actually it's an expensive one.
Oh, you might be right.
Yeah.
I don't. That might have been why I was thinking Lubbock's because it's a species we don't get very often.
Right.
Either way, he looked not cool for a long time, and then about a year ago, he made that full transition.
Yeah, he matured.
Probably around the time he killed one of the other wrasses we tried to add into there.
That would make sense. They kind of do that.
Oops. All right. Well, I feel like we're kind of winding down on the relevant discussion. Do we want to talk about maybe... Oh, wait. I had one more. A pair of blue throat triggers. If we could keep them in, we should always have them.
I know. They're amazing. But the touchiness of those fish, though, is the challenge. It's one of the only triggers that you can pair. It's one of the only triggers that's sexually dimorphic. It's a trigger fish that's reef safe.
I was almost tempted to just say a female blue throat, honestly.
Yes, thank you.
But you have to do the pair just so you can get a pretty one.
Right.
If you have to go with one, get the female.
Get the female.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not going to be as pretty, but...
But you'll see her.
But you'll see her.
Yeah.
Males tend to be so skittish, and trust me, like... The same joke I made with the Royal Grama, like a prettier fish doesn't matter if you can't see it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And the personality in the female is...
It's unbeatable.
Yep.
Yeah, they're so funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, do we want to talk about things that maybe people think would be on this list that wouldn't be? Or that aren't, that we didn't talk about?
I want to bring up Chromos again just because I really want to hammer that nail.
Right.
Well, I can start since I just kind of launched this one out of the blue. Cardinal fish. Bangai or pajama were not on my list.
Right.
Bangai, forget it.
Bangai should be. That should be a fish that everyone should be able to keep. But I don't know why lots of places, not just us, are struggling with them.
Yeah, once you get them established, they're hardy. But that initial few weeks
it's
a
tough.
Gamble.
Yeah, I think they're just super susceptible to stress.
Yeah.
And that stress increases at every step of the supply chain.
Right.
Yeah, and I want to explain something here. We're referring to captive bred ones. We're not referring to wild caught ones. I'm realizing now that if we're talking about this fish and them just dying on us, someone might think it's that disease.
Yeah.
That virus.
Yeah. Nope.
No, that's not what's happening here.
Nobody should be getting wild caught ones anyway, right?
They're, I'm pretty sure it's illegal.
Yeah,
now.
They're pretty.
Nope, they're showing up again.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, God. because they're like pretty, they're endangered, right? Like, yes, they're pretty, yep, threatened.
Yep.
So know where your fish come from, people.
Yeah. Right.
So if you're buying wild caught Bangai cardinals and you're not an experienced breeder, shame on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unequivocally.
Yeah. Yeah. I think every other store I can think of that I've ever walked into would have a tank full of assorted damsels.
Yeah, no thanks.
Right. No. No. No.
I think you were the one that coined the joke where it's a lot of people buy domino damsels, no one keeps domino damsels.
Yeah. Yeah. They're cool. And they get a lot of personality. That personality makes them dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some other really common, the blue devil damsel?
Right. Right.
Apt name.
Yeah.
And isn't there a third one? It's the stripedy one. Black and white stripes.
It's called a black and white striped damsel.
Right. Yeah.
Very creative name. Triggerfish in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and really maybe that comes from the fowler tank or the non-reef safe fish have just, very few people are keeping those kinds of fish lately.
Yeah.
This is meant to be a playful question, but is that a bad thing?
It's a thing. I don't know that, yeah, it's necessarily a bad thing or a good thing.
Yeah.
I like big angelfish.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Me specifically, I do appreciate that, like, I'm sad that fowlers are less common, but I know it's because overall saltwater hobbyists are braver than they used to be. And yeah, so like the hurdle of keeping corals seems so much more like overcomable now.
Well, it's not and even it's, bravery. It's just easier.
Yeah. It's a healthier system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like live plants in a freshwater tank. It's a healthier, easier, more diverse ecosystem.
Well, and maybe that's to me where like the sadness comes from is because for me, like fish that eat plants are well known and obvious. Fish, yes, that eat coral. Well, which coral?
Right.
So like the fowler and the decline of keeping systems like that makes me feel like we're not innovating enough. Makes me feel like we don't know how to, like, what exactly the fish we're taking care of need. Because if we could determine that all 10 of these fish that I would put in my fowler tank won't eat soft corals, well, then I can have a tank chock full of coral.
Yes. Just maybe not frog spawn.
Yeah.
Right.
But we don't know.
Right.
And that's like, but why don't we know? Someone should know. We should be testing this out.
Right. Right. And we're working on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Me and John just casually freaking out about the printer.
Harlequin tusk is one of those fish.
Oh, you know? I love those.
Technically, you could call that fish a reef-safe fish as long as you don't want to keep small fish or shrimp.
Or maybe snails and crabs.
Maybe
either.
Snails and crabs. Yeah, because it will eat them.
I really love a harlequin tusk. That's like one of my favorite reef fish, just for their personalities, yeah, alone, not, yeah, only for how like absolutely stunning they look.
And their big pointy teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, right, that's one of the first fish that I can remember you guys getting me on board with when I started working here?
Really?
But yeah, we had a harlequin tusk fish in, and I came in and was kind of like, this thing looks kind of weird. And I was immediately off-put by it because, you know, I'm weird. And
we probably had him for a year.
Yeah, and yeah, both of you were like, weren't intentionally talking it up. You were just excited about, mm-hmm, him. And Amy got on me on the bandwagon of hand feeding him krill, and he grew on me. And I'm like, yeah, they're a cool fish.
They're cool.
He's just so sweet. Well, and tusk wrasses as a group are some of the smartest fish in the ocean.
Yes.
So like to work with them to like build that relationship would be an absolute blast.
Yeah, absolutely. Watching them use tools is,
yeah,
it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, so I don't know if you could, like, because they're pretty small in that group. So, like, I don't know if they have that level of intelligence, but the bigger ones certainly do.
Definitely. Yeah. I watched one. We had one in a tank in the basement at the old shop. And it was a group of fish that yeah, we were babysitting. We'll just call it babysitting, which is not something we do on a regular basis. No, we're not going to babysit your fish for you. But we had this group of fish, and it included Chromis. And somebody walked by the tank a little quickly, and the Chromis did that dart away, and it caused a flash. And that Harlequin tusk, you could tell it was not thought, it was instinct. It was reflex. Grabbed the Chromis and ate it. They had lived together for a year and a half. But that predatory instinct, all of a sudden, when it saw that flash, could do nothing but eat the Chromis.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know, guys. There's a lot of fish that we just... Where do they fit? I mean, every fish has a place, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe the big struggle, the big challenge that we have is how do we figure out where these fish fit? There's so much information out there about you can keep this fish with this fish and you can't keep this fish with this fish. And there's so much information that contradicts each other and that contradicts our personal experience here at the shop. Part of that's because we quarantine. Part of that's because we have a service department. So we see long-term the effects of these fish with each other. Part of it's the way the hobby is changing and who knows where that's going to end up.
Just the degree of gray area that I wish would be acknowledged more.
Yeah.
I feel like people would have a lot of an easier time contextualizing what goes on in their tank if we all would just admit sometimes the thing that's not supposed to work does. Sometimes the thing that is supposed to work doesn't.
Right.
And both scenarios are normal and okay.
Yeah. When Ben specifically said the phrase, where do these fish fit? My instinctive response is in the wild. And I'm going to go on a very hard rant here. Don't disassociate your hobby with what it is in nature. You need to have the mentality of you are bringing a piece of nature and putting it in your living room. And then remember and appreciate the fact that that piece of nature is out there and it needs to be protected, like, right now. And we can't lose sight of the fact of that. Like, if you'll allow me, I would like to say that one of my favorite things about Phil Hague is his appreciation for wild reefs as an entity.
Right.
And that is really cool to see in another person. And I think that's a mentality that more hobbyists need to have if our hobby is going to continue existing.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. The same way that we ask you to buy one of our t-shirts because it keeps us doing what we're doing. Putting your money into reefs is a good way to allow them to continue to run the way that they are.
Yeah.
If you can do it in sustainable and well-educated ways.
Don't be chasing down for the cheapest fish. Buy the best fish.
Yeah, keep doing it right. So what, I want to hear about some of the fish that you have in your tank that you think everybody needs to have.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of those fish? What do we miss? Of course we miss something and everybody's going to say, but you didn't talk about a fox face.
And you're probably right, you're commenting, by the way.
I want to hear what those are. Part of the point of this exercise was for me to get a better idea of how to keep our saltwater department properly stocked, because sometimes I get bored and I forget about those bread and butter stuff, and those bread and butter stuff are important.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of new hobbyists out there and we need to cater to them. Mm-hmm. But we also need to have the stuff in that keeps us excited about it as well. So tell me what you like. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you think in your tank, even if you're our new friend from Sweden or our, where was that other friend? Austria?
Oh, we got a good one from New Brunswick. That's
New
the
Brunswick.
Email that I sent you.
That's the one, right.
Oh,
yeah.
The messages that we get, the feedback, everything, it's so good.
It's fun. So I want to hear from you guys again about, like, tell me about what your favorite fish that you think everybody should have.
Yeah, and you just kind of triggered for me. Like, yeah, I was trying to figure out what is the difference between all of these things on my list. Why are they on there? And these are the things that I get excited about every time we have.
Nice.
Yeah. So be sure to send us an email at podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com if you do have any of that feedback or those messages. If you want to send us pictures of your tank, we love that.
Mm-hmm.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. We're trying to get some more content out there, give you guys an update on what's going on in the store and an idea of what kind of things we're looking at these days.
Yeah, I like it. Thank you so much for listening. Let's have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.